From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Baltimore is not getting the east-west light rail line many hoped for, the Red Line, but the city is getting an overhaul of its bus system. Paul Comfort has gotten an earful since he came on as head of the Maryland Transit Administration a year and a half ago.
I would hear from people, your buses are late, your buses are dirty, your drivers are rude.
He's hoping complaints like these will end with the changes in the works. Paul Comfort joins us to explain some of the features of the revamped bus system, from new routes and more frequent buses to technology that allows buses to control traffic lights. Prospects for better public transit in Baltimore on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. Last summer, Governor Larry Hogan canceled funding for Baltimore's long-awaited east-west light rail system, the Red Line, soon after he announced the city would instead receive $135 million for a revamped transit system. It's called Baltimore Link. It has many components, one of which is a redesign of the entire bus system with 12 new high-frequency routes. That part is called CityLink. In the year since the announcement, the Maryland Transit Administration has released a draft of the bus plan and then revised it based on more than 1,000 suggestions from riders. The new bus system is slated to be completely underway by next summer. Paul Comfort, administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration, has joined me in studio to talk about Baltimore Link. Paul Comfort, welcome to On the Record.
Thanks, Sheila. Great to be here.
When he announced the funding for Baltimore Link, Governor Hogan called Baltimore's transit system, quote, notoriously abysmal, close quote. How will the new system address problems like buses that often don't come on time?
Right. So I got here to the MTA 18 months ago. And when I got here, the system was broken. And by that, I mean, I would hear from people, your buses are late, your buses are dirty, your drivers are rude. Those are the three main complaints I heard over the first several months. And people may not realize that we're not just Baltimore City's bus system. You know, we have not only light rail and a metro subway system and paratransit service in the city, as well as bus. That serves Baltimore County, Baltimore City, and northern Anne Arundel County. We run the statewide commuter bus service and the statewide commuter train service called MARC Train, and we provide $140 million a year to all 23 jurisdictions in Maryland to run local service. So we're a statewide agency as well as an operating agency. Most people that ride the core service are riding bus, and bus was working the worst. That's what Baltimore Link was designed to do, to help the buses be cleaner, to help the buses get there on time, to make the drivers more friendly, and also to link the system better. The old bus routes were laid out 50 years ago, before Baltimore was the fifth most congested city in America, and they had almost all the routes going to the most congested part of the city, the four main streets in downtown, you know, and it just get jammed up in traffic.
Well, give us a sense of the major components of the new plan.
Sure. The bus system, that's the focal point of Baltimore Link. So the bus routes were on a radial model, kind of on the trolley and the city car routes. A route would start on the far one side of the city at Center for Medicaid Services, Quick Bus 40, for an example, and Baltimore County, and then go miles and miles across the city, east-west, to the other side, and then turn around, and now it's 10 minutes late because it went through the traffic, congestion, the lights, and it comes back. Now it's 20 minutes late. And so all day long, the routes get later and later as they have to go through the congestion.
That sounds like just not being realistic about how long it's going to take a bus to get from point A to point B. It's late if you've defined it as getting there 10 minutes earlier. If you take the traffic into account, it may not be quick, but it wouldn't be late.
That is true. But why can't we just adjust the time points? People are not going to ride a bus service if it takes three times as long to ride the bus as it would to ride your car, or twice as long as it would to ride a bike. And
absolutely,
so the routes themselves needed to be changed. Most of the routes were laid out. It was kind of like a sand clock turned on its side, where all the routes would come from the east and west of the city and then come through the skinny little middle part in the middle. We looked at cities all over the world, from Madrid to Moscow to Paris to big cities in America, and we said, you know, cities that have heavy traffic congestion, what models work well there? And we had gathered a lot of data before I got there. The MTA had gathered data. So for 2 years, they had gathered ridership data at every bus stop, how many people are getting on, how many people are getting off. And so basically, we changed the model to a hub-and-spoke system. So we're building 50 transfer points in the city. Some will be big hubs like West Baltimore Mark Station, which will have, you know, a grand entrance and bus shelters and trash cans and bathrooms. And others will be smaller transfer points where routes connect. But that's the big change behind Baltimore Link.
You're expecting the average rider to do more transferring. It sounds like transfers are a big part of this new system.
We were concerned about that, so we asked the Baltimore Metropolitan Council to model our system. We would make the transfer points where most of the people would be getting off anyway. And so they did. And after our second iteration of this was developed, they analyzed that. There's less than a 2% increase in the amount of transfers that people will have to do. So we were very pleased with that. So the big change is the hub and spoke system. And the second big change is the creation of CityLink, which is the high frequency color-coded routes. Meaning, you know, when you go to the grocery store, if you have more than three people standing in line, they open up another cash register. People don't want to wait. And we heard that from our public, that they don't want to wait at bus stops for a half an hour. If you stand at a bus stop on a CityLink route, which is the backbone of the system, a bus will come every 10 minutes, which means you don't even need a schedule.
That's MTA Administrator Paul Comfort speaking about plans for a new transit system in Baltimore here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. You used this phrase a minute ago, timed transfers. Is it actually the case that you're expecting particular bus to meet another particular bus at a particular time, or is it just that you're expecting so much frequency that nobody will have to wait very long, even if the bus they're on is a bit late?
It's both. So we'll have time transfers, meaning the routes will be timed so that when you get off one bus, another bus will be available, or when you get off a bus at a light rail station or a subway station, another bus, light rail vehicle, or metro subway vehicle will be there within X amount of minutes. So you won't have to wait long. That's the idea.
The MTA revised its plans over the summer after complaints that some major routes had been eliminated.
That's right.
But some riders are still concerned that the new system is going to lose what they're used to.
Oh, yeah. It's going to change. Change is difficult for people. I get that. And so that's why we're making sure we're doing a really big education campaign. Sheila, we've had 200 meetings with the public, with stakeholders, with business groups. We've met with a lot of the major institutions in the city, the hospitals, Harbor East, those groups, transit groups. And we share with them our plans and we got their feedback. So we are now on what I would call version 1.3, which is a few more tweaks that were made after the last round of 20 meetings that was held this summer. You mentioned 1,000, but now we've received a total of 2,000 comments. And we are in the process now of integrating all those comments to come out with a final plan, which we'll go to official public hearings on at the end of this year and the beginning of next year. The big changes will occur in June of next year.
This still seems like a huge learning curve for commuters who are used to the old system, who may have used buses in Baltimore for decades.
Yes. So let's start with the premise of the question. Making change is going to be difficult for people. You know what's difficult for people? A bus system that doesn't work. And this transit system is broken. When I got here 18 months ago, the on-time performance of the Baltimore bus system was one of the worst in the nation. It was at 71-72% on time. People were losing their jobs because they were late for work. And so this system needed an overhaul. And to overhaul it, it meant changing it. And so that's why we took all that data that was gathered for 2 years, plus all the feedback we've gotten from our current users, plus feedback we received from new people who want to ride transit but say it's not reliable. I've had dozens of people tell me, I'm not going to take your bus system because I will be late to work. And so that's what this change is about. And there are many more changes than the ones I've told you about. This is a dramatic remake of the entire transit system. It includes removing bus stops all over the city. We have sometimes 3 and 4 bus stops on one block. And so it's no wonder the buses can't get down. And the routes have been laid out and the bus stops have been laid out largely for political reasons sometimes, where a politician will call up a past administrator and say, I need a bus stop over here. And it wasn't based on what the ridership trends indicated. So we're taking a look at, like, for instance, all the stops that have less than 10 passengers a day. and we're going to optimize them. We're going to combine them with other stops, and that's going to remove 500 stops from our system. If the system is going to become more reliable and more efficient and cleaner, there has to be changes, and they're not going to please everyone.
How are people supposed to learn about
right. So we are entering,
the 12 colors?
Right. So the 12 colors, the theory behind it is, just like the Washington Metro system, a colored system, most cities across the world is where the main trunk lines are. Okay, the Navy line takes me to downtown to the harbor, let's say, for instance, you know, and so there's some idea in their mind where they can connect it. And it's a way to reach out to new riders as well as keep our existing riders. And the colors will be differentiated from the local service. We'll still have 50 local routes all out in all the neighborhoods. People aren't going to lose service. As a matter of fact, we're expanding by 18 square miles, our footprint of where public transit is offered today, because we found there are pockets of people all over the city as we analyzed the map that didn't have any bus service. 30,000 people will now have new access to public transit that never had it before. One of the other neat things about our routes is it increases the amount of jobs that are available to people that live in the city. So you probably are familiar with a study that was done this last year that ranked the top 50 cities in America and which ones of them were the hardest to climb out of poverty in. And Baltimore was the worst out of all 50 cities. So if you're born into poverty in Baltimore City, it is the hardest city to get out of poverty to live in. It's terrible. And they said one of the key factors to help people get out of poverty is how many jobs are available to them within a 30-minute ride. Well, I'm really pleased to say that when the Baltimore Metropolitan Council did an analysis of our routes, the amount of jobs available to people who live in the city increases by 20%.
This is the new routes.
This is the new routes, yeah. So that was a key to me, was helping people who live in the city who, you know, through no fault of their own, may be in tough, dire financial circumstances, and there's no jobs that they can walk to around them, and they don't have a car. Public transit is supposed to be a way to help people get to jobs and improve their financial viability. And so I'm real happy that Baltimore Link does that. And that was part of Governor Hogan's charge to me, was we want to use transit to improve economic development of the whole region. And so it does that.
We have to take a quick break here, and when we're back on the record, we'll talk about some other elements planned for Baltimore Link and what transit workers are saying about it. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR, become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about Baltimore Link, the Maryland Transit Administration's plan to revamp public transit in Baltimore. Now that Governor Hogan canceled plans to build an expensive Red Line Rail project, Paul Comfort, MTA's administrator, is discussing it with us. Baltimore's Transit Workers Union has come up with a competing plan. As you know, they're calling it the People's Alternative to Baltimore Link. The bus system, as they envision it, would include more stops on busy routes. Riders would be able to pay before boarding. It would also cost more than twice as much, the system they're proposing. What do you think of their plan?
So I met with them. This is the Amalgamated Transit Union, and ATU International hired a consultant out of New York that was a bus rapid transit specialist. And so he analyzed our system and said, hey, on the heaviest routes where you have the most ridership, you should look at eventually adding bus rapid transit. Bus rapid transit is a modified version kind of between regular bus service and light rail, and basically it's dedicated lanes. The cool thing about it, though, is you board it like you might a light rail vehicle. So you don't have to go up to the front door and pay your fare there. You can open the back door, and you can open doors on both sides of the vehicles, and people can come on. It's really popular across the world, and I think it's not a bad phase two, maybe in the future, but let's get the system fixed first. The system is broken, and we're going to try this. Houston just did something like this a year ago, and a lot of cities, by the way, across America. I've been contacted by cities everywhere in the country about what we're doing here, because places like Charlotte, Jacksonville, they're all doing the same thing. They're evaluating these routes that were laid out 30 to 50 years ago in their cities, and all the routes in their cities, just like ours, went to downtown. But not all the jobs are downtown anymore. Not everybody wants to go downtown anymore. So they have to change the route model. So in addition to the model and the new 12 color coded routes, we've also added new routes around the top of the city called Express Link, down the sides and across the bottom. So that if you don't want to go downtown, you don't have to. And that was the way the system was set up. Well, so if you were in White Marsh and you wanted to go to Towson, you have to take a route downtown Baltimore, switch buses, and come back out. Well, we changed all that this last June. The MTA operates Baltimore City's transit system and Baltimore County's transit system with no contribution from those local jurisdictions. It's all state funds. And so we were able to get $135 million from the General Assembly, thanks to Governor Hogan's effort to do that, to make this happen. And I'm real excited about this. And then, you know, if we want to do something else down the line as a phase two, I told them, you know, we're definitely open to looking at that.
The MTA's plan includes more dedicated bus lanes. How many more?
So we had two new lanes that were painted 2 months ago, and they're on Pratt and Lombard Streets. And then we're going to do the next two this spring. So we'll do Baltimore and Fayette Streets. And those will be the four main downtown grid streets. Just so people know, we're in the enforcement phase on those now. The Baltimore City Police and MTA Police are writing tickets. So if you drive your car in a bus-only lane, a red lane on those four streets, you'll most likely get a $90 fine and 1 point on your license. And then we'll also have potentially some north-south streets as well.
Talk to me about the trade-off involved, because these dedicated lanes may speed up the commute for bus riders, but they take lanes away from motorists and presumably, I'm guessing, will make traffic worse.
So
what's the trade-off?
The city's hope, when the Baltimore City Transportation Department looked at all this and they did some engineering analysis of their own to determine how much traffic would be pushed into the other lanes and could the streets hold the traffic, part of the analysis was that some people will get out of their cars now once transit's more reliable and start riding the buses and start riding light rail and the subway when it all interconnects and is more reliable and is more efficient. And their engineers determined that there would be enough space on the streets to effectively have cars go through. And we also, as you saw, have added hashed marks so people can use those right-hand lanes when they're making right-hand turns. And so when you're driving down a red bus-only lane, when you see it like chopped up, that means you can get your car in there if you're turning right.
Is it fair then to say that congestion on those streets is likely to get worse before it gets better? You think it's going to get better, but...
We've already got it on two streets, and there's been no reported dramatic increase in congestion. So that's good. That's what we were hoping.
The new buses will have control of traffic lights at some intersections.
Yeah.
Tell us about that.
You know, a lot of cities have transit signal priority for their ambulances, so that if an ambulance comes up to a traffic light, it'll turn green for them. Transit signal priority is going to be added to up to 200 intersections in the city, and it'll be added first to our CityLink buses and then eventually maybe some other buses. We have $11 million in the budget that Governor Hogan got us to make this happen. And the idea is that if a bus is coming to a light and it's about to turn red, it sends a signal, an optical signal, to the traffic signal, which it receives it, and it says, hey, I'm coming, hold the light for 6 or 7 more seconds. And so it lets the bus get through.
So it's a marginal change in much extra time.
That's right. It's not actually turning a red light green, you know, instantly. So it holds the light a little longer, or if a bus is at a red stop light and it's sending the signal, it'll turn it green faster. But it's not like an instant change. But when they did this in Los Angeles as a pilot program, it improved travel times by 25%. So if a route was normally taking an hour, it could be done in 45 minutes. That's significant improvement in the reliability and efficiency of the route. And it'll be live on some intersections this spring.
I'm not sure I understand, though. Is it something that the bus driver triggers, or is it automatic?
It's automatic. When a bus is equipped with it and it's turned on, it'll emit a signal which will be received in the light box, and it's done automatically. The driver doesn't have to do it.
And does this only work when the bus is the first vehicle approaching the light?
I believe it also could happen if it's the second or third, as long as the light can receive the signal.
The MTA held all these workshops to get public feedback on the second draft of the bus plan. What are the big changes that came from that?
On the second draft, most of the changes were tweaks. Most of the dramatic changes came after the first round of hearings when Greenmount Avenue, the people felt like it didn't have enough service. There was two or three streets where we had adjusted based on projected ridership, and we made some changes back to those streets to make sure they got coverage. After the second round of meetings, they were like bus stops, timing, smaller tweaks that people were asking for. Nothing real significant came out of that I'm aware of.
And what will all these changes mean for the Charm City Circulator?
Right. So one of the changes is that the Hogan administration has committed an extra $1 million to the circulator. We were giving them $2 million a year to help subsidize that service, and we've increased it this year to $3 million because the circulator, we all believe, serves an important purpose, especially in the downtown areas for tourists, et cetera, who want to just jump on and jump off to a free service. One of the key factors that slows a bus down is that onboarding time. When people have to get on a bus and they purchase a day pass, for instance, it adds 30 seconds to every person that does that. We've added it up. It's 53,000 hours of inefficient time there. So we are working on getting people to use what's called the Charm Card, which is our multi-use card. And when I got here, only 3% of our riders were using it.
This was, again, a year and a half ago.
Yeah, a year and a half. Now we're up to 10%. We've done a lot of promotion. We've encouraged people to use it. And as you probably know, we also transport 27,000 school children every day during the school year because for middle schoolers and high schoolers, we're their bus system. And so we're moving all of them off their little paper tickets to the monthly Charm Card. They're in it this year. We've got a brand new system. The student ID cards now have their picture on it. And in addition to using it on the bus, they use it at school as their library card, their attendance verification card, and their lunch card has stored value on it. And so we've been able to integrate with the Baltimore City school system tremendously. And that's also going to help improve getting on the bus quicker. And so part of the way we're working on improving the ride experience is less time at the fare box.
This is a complex set of changes. What is your biggest concern? What could go wrong? What's going to be the hardest thing to make sure happens?
I think training the drivers. We have to train 1,200 drivers on new routes. The routes will be finalized in the first part of the year. Then we'll have 5 months to train 1,200 drivers to drive different routes. Now, a lot of them are very similar to our current routes, but we're going to use all the latest training techniques as well. We're using GoPro cameras to film all the routes, and I actually want to put them on YouTube so the passengers can see the new routes as well as the drivers. And so a driver might get trained in their new route in March and then have video refresher training, but have to be able to drive that June 17th, because we're rolling through 20 drivers at a time, training them, et cetera, on the routes. They go out and actually drive the routes multiple times over several days, and then they'll have refresher training. But that probably, to me, is the biggest challenge.
And what do you think will be the biggest pleasant surprise for commuters?
Hopefully, it'll be the reliability of the system. And so the goal of adding in bus-only lanes, putting in transit signal priority, changing the model of the system, connecting to light rail and subway, all of that, the goal is to make it more reliable so that we want to get the on-time performance up. The national average for cities our size is 78% on-time performance. We want to be well into the 80s. I mean, on our rail service, we're 95% on time. We've gotten that up 10 points since I got here 18 months ago. We want to be a national leader in on-time performance.
And what is it about the design of this system that you're shepherding through that you think will make that possible?
What's slowing the bus down is too many bus stops. If you stop three times in a block, it's slowing it down. The traffic and congestion that two-thirds of the routes had to go through, now we've opened up the grid. Instead of just coming through four streets, we're using 8 to 10 streets all the way up to North Avenue as our main grid, helping people get around the city on the express routes. Those are all kind of new factors which will improve the on-time reliability of the system, the transit signal priority, getting through traffic lights, the bus-only lanes. All those things add up to iterative improvement. Each one may add 1% improvement, and hopefully it'll add up to 4, 5, or even 6 points improvement in on-time performance. I think the other thing people are going to like is we've added all kinds of new services and new amenities to the system, and to make it cleaner. You know, like on NASCAR, there's pit crews. So we're going to do that for our major hubs. We're creating pit crews. We'll come out. Instead of waiting till the bus only gets cleaned once a night and swept out once a day, in route, while it's at a layover, we'll have a cleaning crew come out and clean up the bus, sweep it out and make it clean, you know, in the middle of the day.
I really appreciate your telling us about it. Thank you.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks.
Paul Comfort is administrator of the Maryland Transit Administration. The system we're talking about is called Baltimore Link at the On the Record page at WIPR.org. We've got links to some information and analysis of Baltimore Link. This is On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for tuning in. I hope you'll join us again tomorrow.